Gang, welcome to Open Support. Great to be with everybody today. As people enter the Zoom room, guys, if you want to join this call, this is a free Open Support call to anybody that is interested in real estate. All you have to do if you're looking at this on YouTube or Instagram or any of the other places is to go to our free Facebook group. It's a free but private group, the Investor Creator Community, and the link is posted there. So as we get going, I wanted to take a moment and really just go over a deal that we have closing tomorrow. So Tyler is our purchase manager. This is my Slack thread. So to kind of go through this, the mortgage principal balance is $77,000. There's about $20,000 in arrears on this deal. We're taking over payments on the $77,000 mortgage. Really, it's $97,000 as a payoff and then $20,000 in arrears. So we'll have to pay that $20,000. And so that'll bring the balance back down to $77,000. But that mortgage is at 3.25%. So if you guys look here, there's a $277 principal interest payment per month. Okay. So like I spend more on coffee than that per week, and it needs some repairs, but it's definitely livable the way it is. And the ARV is 185. So how this is going to work for the deal analyzer. So we put the numbers on the left-hand side of the board, $77,000 walk away on this deal is six. So the seller is getting $6,000 cash at closing. Repairs, $35,000, but we're not going to do that. We're going to owner finance this house as is. ARV 185 and arrears is $20,000. So I'm bringing in a private money lender for the 20 grand and the 6 grand. So my owner finance value on this as is going to be $150,000. I'll probably get a 20% down payment, but let's just be a little bit pessimistic and say we get $20,000 down. And so we create a note of $120,000. So that note, that $120,000 note is all inclusive of the debt on the property. Okay. So I'm going to have no money in this deal, and this is going to be a cash flow deal. Okay. So cash coming in. So this is my profit box. I'll have $20,000 in down payment money coming in, and then $6,000 and $20,000 going out. So I'm going to be negative $1,000. But when we look at the note, so my note equity is 120 minus the 77K. Okay. So 120 minus 77, we've got a $43,000 note, which is pretty good. But the real benefit of this deal is going to be in the cash flow. Okay. So obviously I'm already ahead because I bought a $43,000 asset really for $1,000. Does that make sense? So I've got $43,000 in money owed to me and I invested $1,000 net to create that note. Okay. But I want to talk about the cash flow. So the principal interest out, and guys, this is open support. So if you have a question about anything you guys want to talk about, just raise your hand and we'll get to that here in just a second. So anybody that has anything, do that and we'll get to it shortly. But all right. So my principal interest out is $277 per month. Okay. So we're making arbitrage and interest on this deal. So if I take a $120,000 note on a 30-year term, at 8%, I've got PIN of $880. So I've got $603 per month in cash flow on this deal. Okay, $603 per month. So if we really just look at it holistically, I paid $1,000 net cash to create a $43,000 note payable to me. That's creating $603 per month in cash flow. Okay. You guys see the power in this, because this is a deal that we could not wholesale and we could not fix and flip on this house. Okay. The numbers were too tight, but because we understand financing, we understand title, we're able to create a good equity position on this deal regardless. Okay. All right. Hopefully that makes sense. We'll go to the questions. Brian, how's your day?
Good, man. Good. A quick question on the numbers. I just want to make sure I'm understanding. So your 26 cash into the deal for the walkaway for the arrears.
That's right.
Your owner finance value said is 150 and a down payment of 20.
Correct.
Where's the delta? There's 10 grand in there. So if you got owner finance at 150, down payment 20, is the note 130 or is it 120?
The note is 120. So,
okay.
I'm sorry. I did my math wrong. I did my math wrong all the way on this. Dude, good catch. So this is 130. So my cash flow would actually be better. And I have 20K come in. And so I'm negative six cash and then 53 on the note.
Okay. I'm sorry. I that's what I was missing.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I'm wrong. So this is what happens when I've had too much coffee and I get too excited about something. Everything goes kind of wonky.
All right. That was all that I had. Thank you.
Cool. For sure. So the power in this is we're creating cash flow. Okay. Like fixing and flipping houses is fine. You know, wholesaling houses is fine. But the aim of the business is to create cash flow. Like nobody goes into their golden years of retirement and says, hey, let's flip more houses. Like the goal is let's live off the interest. Right. So good catch on that. Zach, what's up, bud?
Brad, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just down here in Florida getting sunburned. How about you?
Ooh, I'm envious. I'm in Nashville in a room not getting sunburned at all. I do have a minor predicament I could use your help on. I think I kind of know where this is going, but
okay. We'll
see. So it's the deal I had in North Carolina. To refresh your memory, it was one where I got under contract about a month ago for $300. It's in rural Mount Pilot, like, you know, barring Andy Griffith area. So with the local realtors, you know, all day, probably 380 might get, you know, 400. And again, it could be a little over, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that homes don't sell very often. So it could be good. It could not be. So fast forward, I talked to James about a week or so ago, and he recommended that I go ahead and get an inspection. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and like the pros are kind of, I mean, plus or minus the roof needs repaired / like some, you know, improvements on it. But just to cut to the chase, like at that time I had a vibe where this seller wasn't going to go down. Like his motivation was inherited. He spent some money over $100,000 to like do a salt, like a rehab on it. And he's the executor of him and his two other siblings.
Mm.
So instead of just selling it with his story to me, instead of selling it to a realtor, he'll sell it to me and, you know, kind of move on. And he was pretty firm about that 300. So
okay.
I talked to him last night about everything. I had sent a couple real, you know, contractors out there. He kind of hauled around when I did that. He's like, well, I got a local contractor I can just give you. And that did some of my renovations. Well, I didn't feel comfortable with that because I'm like, well, I entertained it, but even just because, but then the contractor's like, well, that's not that big of a deal, man. And oh, that one, I wasn't really worried about that. I'm thinking, I mean, it's probably you are, you're clearly working for arguably him, not being objective. And so then on Saturday, I had another independent, just general, like handyman contractor come out, and he kind of messed up everything. He was supposed to come out of the house. I had it all organized, and then it rained. I didn't know that. He didn't tell me that he wasn't going to go out the house. So my contractor drives like an hour, I guess, not a total trip. He said he spent about an hour of his time, only to find out that the owner wasn't there. And then here's a story, more drama, man, like where my contractor that I had out there who I have no relationship with was like, he calls me on Monday and he's like, yeah, on Saturday, Zach, just to let you know that the owner told me not to tell you that about our conversation, that I wasn't there. And he's like, I thought it was kind of weird, but he's like, okay, like I'll just. And then when I brought that up to the seller last night, he was like, what? That's ridiculous. I never said that. And just going back and forth and very, but I spoke with this guy last night, Brad, for way too long. Like, you're going to be like, if I tell you, you'd be like, are you kidding me, Zach? Like, why the hell would you talk to him that long?
Yeah. So don't tell me.
I won't, because I can already feel the judging. and rightfully so. But we were going back and forth. I mean, from the start of the conversation, Brad, it was very hostile. I was like, he's like, man, if you don't want this deal anymore, man, that's fine. Dude, I was like, did you get the inspection report? He's like, yeah. And I don't agree with most of those things on there. And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about it. You know, and he's like, what? Zach, I told you everything that was going on in the house at the time of you signed the contract. And I'm like, can we just like, what's the animosity, man? Like, why are we, you know, we started off on this foot, like, if you don't want it, Zach, that's fine. Just let me know and I'll move on. And all that to say, Brad, is like, I know he didn't budge on the 300. I told him we went through everything. I said, well, I can maybe do that if we do some now, some later. Like, if you're adamant that this could sell, he's, oh, did you make 80, 100,000? I was like, every time I try to go back to the data, he didn't want to talk about it. He's like, I don't care about that shit. I don't care about those houses.
I don't care about facts. I care about my feelings. I get it. Yeah.
So I'm over here just feeling, I mean, maybe I'll just have to eat the $700 that I paid, which way too much for all this inspection and stuff, but I don't know. James mentioned that he can file a memorandum and then you can maybe hold out and, you know, before to get maybe some of the money back, but
no,
is it just kind of a sunk cost? And I was like, at this time, and,
yeah, I mean, you can't file a memorandum and hope that they reappear and then you hold title hostage. Okay. So like that's a no. I mean, what you have to decide, we can't make a seller renegotiate. You know, we can decide, okay, if they won't renegotiate, does the deal make sense or not? And it sounds like it doesn't based on what's going on. But, I mean, one thing that I'll say is if I have a seller and they start off with like, if you don't want the house, then that's just okay. You know, that, just tell me. It's like, well, I don't know if I want the house, you know, and I can't say definitively, you know, because I haven't heard the call. But I think that if this is a recorded call, it would be really good for you to go back and listen to the first 15, 20 minutes and see, hey, you know, how does it feel outsiders looking in? You know what I mean? Because I think.
Yeah, I recorded it.
Yeah, good. So that'll be just really, really good training. And that goes for everybody. Like whenever you're in the business, recording your calls, how I got really good at negotiation is I recorded my calls and I'd go through them again and again and again. And whenever I was in person buying a house, I would record that too. Now, make sure that you can do that in your state because, you know, some states are one party states, meaning that only one person has to give permission of a recording. In some states, it's two party states, meaning both people or all people have to consent to the recording. And that can be really kind of wonky if you walk into a house being like, hey, I'm recording this. Is that cool? You know what I mean? But how I got really good at negotiation is I would record my in-person presentations and I would listen to them again and again and again. And so I think for you, it would probably be good to go back and really just relive this one and see. But I mean, anytime I have somebody that's just not in reality, it's like, I don't care about that stuff. I don't care what stuff is sold for. Like, well, help me understand how I'm supposed to make a decision based on your feelings versus the facts. And I would say like exactly like that. And I'm not trying to be like acrimonious, but it's difficult to deal with somebody that they base the value based on how they feel versus what the data suggests, you know? So I would just cut them loose.
Okay. And in the future, I mean, I guess, because I had a vibe that he might not renegotiate, I guess in that regard, is that something you learn? Like, hey, I mean, because I feel like, I mean, going back and forth, I probably would have just not paid for the inspection and stuff. But is that something that, how do you factor in that?
Or, yeah.
Because I just had this vibe like he was probably not going to renegotiate.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You don't know until you go through it. And I've had so many people that in my past, whenever I do the renegotiation, that I thought, oh, this is going to be tough. And they end up caving $40,000. And so they don't, you don't know until you have the third party data. And this is why. So for anybody that doesn't know, we get home inspections on everything that we take title to. And the reason for that is twofold. Number one, the most obvious, we know condition. But secondly, it allows us a third party report that allows us to renegotiate the deal if we have to. And so then it's really about, hey, this third party person, the state licensed home inspector said A, B, C, and D about the property. I didn't know that whenever I agreed to buy it. Is that the least you'll take? You know, so. And it's extremely rare that we get somebody that doesn't come off at all on the price. But like whenever we're in business, we want to have processes, and a process is a leaky bucket. So there's no such thing as a foolproof process that works all the time. What you have to have is a process that works a majority of the time. So like as an example, in our negotiation script work, we never give an offer. We never make a price or give an offer ever. And there's going to be some people that we alienate with that process. And some people are going to get off the phone with us because they want us to make an offer. But we know for a fact that we buy more houses and we get more terms because of that process. You know, I can't begin to tell you how many houses that I bought when they had three offers already and they wanted me to make a fourth. And because I wouldn't make an offer, I bought a house. And oftentimes walked out with a cheaper price with terms than what the cash offers were. You know, and that's just a different level of negotiation. Anytime that you can make people really question the higher offers, you know, and do it in a parable format, then you're going to be in a better position. So in terms of this, man, like what we can't do is say like, I feel like the seller might do this, so I'm going to change my process. The process needs to remain linear across all deals. And I promise you, home inspections on everything is a great process. I mean, I wish I knew the averages. I used to keep up with it. I know that I've had people come off 60 grand on a house that I was going to buy anyway at the price. You understand what I'm saying? So that covered the home inspections for like the next 100. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, man. I'm definitely trying to think of this, you know, long term. I mean, right now I'm very emotional because I just, you know, I'm really in it, you know, feeling it. So I'm definitely, I appreciate you saying that. And I do try to force my mind into learning. Hey, it's just the process, learning, chalk it up. I mean, he could have went down and he could have took terms. So I'm only frustrated because it didn't work out in the way in which I wanted it to.
But the thing is, it's not over yet anyway. And this reminds me of the Chinese parable where it's like, I'm sure some of you guys have heard this and I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like this. So Chinese farmer in really rural China has these horses. The horse runs away and the neighbor says, oh, that's terrible. And he says, well, maybe. And then the horse comes back with a team of horses, you know? So it's like, oh, that's great. Well, maybe. Then his son gets on one of the horses, falls, breaks his leg. Oh, that's terrible. Well, maybe. Then the conscriptors come the next day to get soldiers for war and they pass him by because his leg is broken. It's like, oh, that's great. Well, maybe. And you don't really know right now whether this deal is a good deal for you or a bad deal for you. So we shouldn't be emotionally involved in this deal anyway. This guy may come back after you fire him and say, hey, what could we do? 250? We don't know yet, you know, or it could be a deal that this guy's hiding something and we don't want the deal regardless, you know? So, you know, just try to keep perspective on it, man. It can be frustrating whenever you're this close, you think to a deal and it's like, you know, but
I know. And I'm partly, I feel like this week, because it's been such a long interval between my last deal. So I just got that one done. And it's like, I'm trying to get this momentum going.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just all part of the fun of it, but I just got to embrace the,
hey, I was a slow start in the business, man. I mean, the first year that I did a deal a month was probably like year 5 or 6 for me, something like that. So it's okay to be like start off slow in the business as long as you don't quit. You know, incremental improvements over time become exponential. So just hang in there, man. Be principled with your decision making and work the process. You'll be fine.
Appreciate that, man. Thanks a lot.
100%. Cool. All right, Justin, how's it going, man?
Hey, good, Brad. Hey, my Facebook post about that owner finance selling either going with a 30-year term or a 10-year term.
Yep.
I understand that I could, you know, you mentioned that put extra money towards the underlying. Mm-hmm. I would, my gain will be $150 a month. And if I'm given the deposit back to the homeowner to cover their 401k, it just kind of seems silly to me. Knowing that, would that still be your decision taking that amount rather than the longer term interest?
So when I answered that, it was like 4 a.m. So there might be something that I missed. But so in general, with the same rate and the same principal balance, a 10-year note is a more valuable note than a 30-year note because you're getting paid off faster. So the present value of those payments is a higher value. So like if I was going to go sell a note on the market and each one was an unpaid principal balance at 8% of 100 grand, the 10-year note would get a much higher price selling it than a 30-year note. Okay. And that's why if you go and get a mortgage, 30-year rates are more expensive than 20-year rates that are more expensive than 10-year rates because there's less risk on the lender in that. But if your cash flow is substantially better on the 30 and it just makes more sense to do that, then that's fine.
Okay, that makes more sense. I'm totally lost when it comes to future money.
Yeah,
present. That's over my head right now. I'll get there eventually. But so maybe would it not be smart just taking the cash month to month now and then worrying about the payoff later? Or is that kind of dangerous as far as not paying extra every month on the underlying?
Well, you don't want to be upside down.
Okay,
so it's okay to cash flow it until it's like pretty well even. I would still want a little bit of a buffer. but then you want to pay it to where they pay off concurrently.
Understood. Okay. One other question for you. I have an owner finance house that's in really bad shape. Well, I'm closing on it soon. So my question is not really the numbers, that the land's worth more than I'm paying. But so somebody went in and cut the electricity wires from the pole and pulled it from the attic. So it needs all new electrical. When you owner finance out, is that something that you determined to make it livable as having electrical in the house?
Yeah, it's much tougher to try to sell a house that like doesn't have utilities. Much tougher.
Okay.
So I'm not going to say it's impossible. We've done it, but it is tougher. Like I've sold houses on an owner finance that were half burn up before one time.
Okay.
You know, but okay. It's not easy.
Okay. And then there's like broken windows and the front door. Like that stuff probably should be done too.
I wouldn't worry about that. That's cosmetic.
No. Really.
Yeah.
Oh,
like
okay.
Major systems issues, leaky roof, structural if it's unsafe, no electric, no water. Like that stuff is like, we got to get it to some sort of condition, but broken windows, dirty carpet, like that kind of stuff. Like I have a rental that I'm exiting and we got three offers on it. We're retailing it for cash. And, they sent me pictures of the carpet and I couldn't believe that they put it on the market that way, but it's still sold. So, you know, I'm not Joanna Gaines. I'm just good enough guy. Like it's okay. A safe, good product that looks pretty good most of the time. Sometimes.
Okay. Got it. Understood. That helps. Thank you, sir.
Cool. For sure, man. All right, Brian, you're up.
All right. So just real quick, back to that example that you started out with, the deal you guys are closing on.
Yep.
Being that you're -$6,000 on the cash up front for that pretty healthy cash flow, for someone obviously who's very much a beginner, is there a limitation to what you're willing to do negative cash up front if the cash flow on the back end is really good?
Yeah, but I would say it's a moving target. So, you know, what I would want to look at is, okay, how quickly am I going to get my cash back? And on this deal, 10 months, right? So that's a pretty quick turnaround time. I would say 3 years would be the maximum that I would look at. But then I'm also looking at, okay, what kind of market is this in? You know, what is this price relative to median price in this market? Do I like the asset? So if this was a house like we were just talking about with Justin, where, you know, there's no electricity, I don't like that nearly as much as you know, a deal that's turnkey. So, you know, as much as I wish I could have a decision tree that's always like, if this, then that, it gets me to the right decision all the time. Sure. I think good decisions are often made in shades of gray. And so that's really a lot of what I like to do support for, is to talk about not what to think, but how to think about it. Right. So, yeah, but something like this, I mean, needs cosmetics, pretty good market, cash flowing 600 per month, you know, pretty quickly. Yeah. I mean, this is one we would burn some cash if we needed to.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Alex, how goes it?
Hey, Brad. I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing well, man. What you got today?
So I got one. It is a 134 mortgage. 2.1% interest rate, $0 walk away, repairs 70, and then ARV 265 with 8,500 in arrears.
Okay.
So the main thing being those repairs, I walked it this morning. I'm out of Nashville, so it's in Westmoreland. It was close enough for me to take the pictures and walk it.
Yep.
After I already papered it the other night. And so it's, the floors are wavy. So it's very outdated, which I know is fine. There's a pipe that's leaking underneath the house in the crawl space that I was thinking about fixing before owner financing. That's kind of the smaller question. The bigger question is the floors, they're not unsafe, but they're very wavy. I got it into the crawl space a little bit. It's a 1930s build. So, just how they set up that crawl space, it's not very easy to crawl around it in.
Yeah.
But that's my main concern. Auction is set for April 4th. We have it, and he's worked with wholesalers before that couldn't push it. We're, of course, you know, looking to owner finance this thing. So just want to get your take on that and what you're thinking. I have some pictures I can show you if you'd like.
Backing up. Is this on like a stack stone foundation, or like what's the foundation on it?
So it has a crawl space. It has the stone underneath. So can I show you pictures of it?
Yeah, let's do that, man.
Okay.
So is the galvanized still hooked up?
No, I don't think so. From what I could see, most of the galvanized.
Okay, you got pegs.
There's an old water heater. I think they replaced it with all that, because there was some galvanized going to this old water heater.
Man, that looks junky as hell.
Yeah, they have a new one. There's a few years old one.
Okay.
So it's just one that they left down there. Yeah, so you really couldn't get too far in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a giant rock that you'll see in the middle, and this is as far in as I could get to it.
Well, kudos on even going that far. I'd have looked in there and been like, okay, I'm out. You know, like, this is what the home inspector does.
I had to dig around in there for a minute to figure this one out.
Yeah.
So that's really all I could see in there.
So how did the framing look? Because I can't really tell. I mean, it kind of looks okay from 1930s, but like, what's creating the waviness?
It's just, so the floors, none of them feel like they're falling in. It doesn't feel like I'm taking a step and I'm about to go through them. It just looks like it's the entire thing is uneven. I don't have a great answer for you there. The roof is newer. The HVAC is newer. All the other CapEx stuff is in good condition.
Okay.
This is not looking. So I'll just show you the old pictures. It's in pretty much the same condition as it was when he bought it. And he got it with an FHA loan.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's why I don't know how it passed FHA inspection when the floors were that wavy.
Well, I mean, there's very few 1930s houses that would pass. You know what I mean? Especially with that crawl space looking that way. I mean, So can you drop a marble and the marble runs to a corner, or like does it just wave up and down throughout the whole way?
Yeah. Each room is different.
Okay. So I would sub three this, man. I think I would let it roll at 199.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, I would get a home inspection on this, because there might be something, you know, it what we don't want. Let me just go through this. Like, I bought a house. There's the first house I've bought twice. Okay. From two different people. So I bought it once for 40 grand, owner financed it. They cashed me out. And then I bought it the second time for, I think, 15, and owner financed it for 140, something like that. And it was funny, you know, man, because the lead came in, I was like, that address looks familiar to me. And I was like, I've already bought this house and sold it. You know, then I bought it a second time. It was a fun deal. But on that one, what we had was the crawl space was really, really shallow. You couldn't, there really was no access, and there was no vapor barrier. And so the moisture was coming up, and in a good chunk of the house, you had the lumber had deteriorated. The framing had deteriorated to the point that one kitchen just like literally sat down on the ground. You know, so if you have those types of issues, then I probably would not want to do this deal. Okay. At all, based on these numbers. I don't think that that's what's happening, but I would want to get a home inspection to kind of look at it and see, because it's just like, that's just something that you just don't want to deal with, because then you have to build it up from the top, and that's a pain. And we did it, and I owner financed it again. And then what happened on that deal for everybody else is the person that I bought it from, I'm sorry, that I sold it to, went in and gutted it and reframed it. So like, whenever I foreclosed on him, it was to the studs, framed and dirt, like no subfloor at all. And so I was like, okay. And this was in 2021 when the market was just crazy. I was like, we're going to retail exit this and get rid of it. So, you know, I bought it for 15. I owner financed it for 150. I ended up selling it for cash at 85 to somebody that was going to be a rehab. And they ended up having to tear it down completely. So it was just not savable. So, you know, I got lucky on that one. But get the home inspection. Numbers look okay. I would under finance at 199. That'll create a heck of a spread for you. I mean, that'll be a nice deal.
Okay.
All right. Fernando, how's it going?
Hey, Brad. How's it going?
Good. How about you?
I actually work with Hags. That's the first time seeing the Hags.
Oh, funny.
I had a couple of questions for you
here,
and I just wanted to take, it's more like mindset stuff, but What are your red flags that you look out for when you think there's possible fraud involved in a transaction?
So, like, kind of give me an example of what you're seeing, and let's kind of go through it.
So we have a property still in North Carolina. The first title attorneys we reached out to, I didn't know that one of the lawyers there works for the note holder that is foreclosing on this seller.
Yep.
And so in the middle of it, we just didn't want that conflict of interest.
Sure.
So we chose another one about 45 minutes north of there, out of the town. We're supposed to close on that last Friday. We had sent everything in, wired them money. We were using hard money lender, and they emailed us back yesterday and said that he didn't feel comfortable closing on it. Now, the reasons I stated were just that the seller didn't bring his ID to closing, and it took him a couple of days to bring it in and for them to verify that. I wasn't sure what that was about. We were actually using Aubrey on this one, and they said that because he came from a family trust, that it just didn't, I don't know if they just haven't seen that before, but they didn't feel comfortable closing on that because they hadn't worked with him before. But they also haven't worked with us either, and they said they just felt uncomfortable with us being out of state. So it sounds like a bunch of fluff, but
yeah.
I'm just trying to see what other red flags to look out for.
Well, I have seen more fraud lately than I've ever seen. And, you know, in my first, you know, I'm almost at 20 years in the business between being a realtor and the investing side as of May of this year. And up until 2 years ago, I had never had a title claim. And I've probably had five in the past 12 months. And one of which was just straight fraud. You know, seller got a fake ID, said that they were the seller. They weren't, supposedly. And I've had the opposite happen where somebody comes after closing, my seller comes after closing and says, I'm the actual owner. The person that deeded you this is not the owner. And what happened on that deal was the seller went and did $30,000 worth of meth in about a month and a half and like lost her mind and wanted the house back. So she tried to claim fraud after the fact, even though like we ended up having her ID and a notary that met her and said, yes, this is the person. So I've had like all kinds of stuff happen in my career, but the thing that we want to do is make sure that we do our best to protect our lenders for sure. You know, it's like, that's the first thing. And, you know, besides that, man, like if I have title insurance on a deal, and I don't think that it's my responsibility to try and look out for fraud. You know, like if I have insurance on title, that's what insurance is for. And, you know, if there's something that's missed or whatever, but I have the title insurance, then I'm okay. You know what I mean? And that protects the lender as well because they have a lender's coverage, you know? So, you know, but I've had all kinds of things happen. I've got a deal right now in Knoxville where seller wants to sell. And now his two children have jumped in and said, we're not selling. He's sick. He still wants to sell. And we think that they're just trying to like make sure he dies quickly with this house so that they can inherit. You know, so it's like, how do you deal with these situations? You know, and it's tough because you don't really know the whole story, but you have a hunch that something's wrong, you know, and it's very difficult to ascertain like what's the best thing for people and also being a good steward of your company. So, I mean, those are the things that I would look at, man, but I'm seeing more and more wonky stuff when it comes to title. And I used to not be a big fan of title insurance because I'd paid in God only knows how much and never had a title claim. I got a $60K check a few weeks ago on a title claim, you know, so I'm feeling better about everything I paid in, you know what I mean? But, I mean, it's kind of crazy at times for sure.
Okay. Probably ask me or tell me this morning to look at the record deeds office and see if they filed a substitution of trustee. Just for the foreclosure, which they did, and everything matched up there. So yeah. I don't know, maybe I'm just digging into it too much, but we have another title company now looking into it, and maybe we'll close this time.
Well, I will say, if I was in a situation in a small town, and I've seen all kinds of really weird small town stuff happen, if I was in a small town and one attorney represented a note holder, I could absolutely see them calling around and saying, hey, if there's a closing, you know, on this deal, don't take it. you know, and stall them and tell them you're going to do it and then wait to the last second so that we can get this property. You know, I've seen stuff like that happen. And is it illegal? I don't know. You know,
it's a great reminder.
So
yeah, and maybe it is, but what was going on with this guy before is the seller was saying, Brad, that the note holder had a good relationship with the attorneys in town. And so like, there definitely seemed like there was some weird stuff going on with this one as we were working it.
Yeah.
And now we don't know who to believe. The seller's saying one thing and these title companies are saying another about him. So
well,
it's just a little bit of that.
I would probably do a work with the title company on the other side of the state. You know, they can still close if, you know, that's what I would do, you know, outside of it being an attorney state where they want to meet people generally, you know, so like in Georgia, an attorney has to be, quote, a procuring cause in the transaction, you know, so where that line is exactly, I don't know, but I do know that they don't really love to send mobile notaries. Like it's kind of gray area as to whether mobile notaries are supposed to work in Georgia. They do it, but they don't like to. You see what I'm saying? So I would probably go to a bigger title company somewhere that we feel has no vested interest in this town.
Okay. We're going to say try that if this one doesn't work out.
Yeah.
There's a couple of situations that came up. Actually, one that we closed yesterday where we closed on it so too, and I go to log into the seller's portal, and he has another loan on there that he's supposed to be closing on at the end of the month. We're trying to get them to just open up a separate account with the same, it's Rocket Money or whatever they're called.
Yeah, Rocket Mortgage.
To open up a separate account so that, you know, we have our own portal and he has his own. Have you ever dealt with that or have to deal with this or having two mortgages under the same account?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty common. I actually had a deal with U.S. Bank one time where we shorted a U.S. Bank second and U.S. Bank was in first position as well. And I would tell the second mortgage company, hey, the first is foreclosing. You better short your second. And they're like, oh, yeah, we see it's in foreclosure. But it was the same bank foreclosing. So it really made no sense for them to do. That was kind of funny. That was in Marietta. But yeah, man, I mean, I've definitely seen that.
So what do we do here? Just that? Just have them create another account or just keep it all the same?
So I guess it's unclear to me why we would need a second account.
Well, I just don't want to get confused with him going in there and making the payments and us going in there making payments to a separate mortgage with our forwarding address on there, our number, you know, proceeds of escrow. I mean, all of that.
Yeah.
We just want that to be separate with us as opposed to it being with his contact information.
Also. Yeah. So what you do, you take your power of attorney, you call the bank. Well, you file the power of attorney, call the bank. Hey, I need to change the PO box to this. I need to change the mailing address or the mailing address to this PO box. And I'm now the contact on record. Okay. So, I mean, we use our sellers, mortgage logins all the time and we don't create like a separate login or anything like that. You know, we just go in, we pay it. You know, they have, and really it's good because they have access to see that it is being paid. So, you know, for us, instead of them calling us being like, hey, is the payment going to be made? It's like they can log in and see that it's done, you know, and I like that. So it's one of the ways that we just pay the mortgages as a standard.
Okay. So just file everything like we normally would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. And then Alex, if you want to chime in on this too, there's a property in Fort Myers, Florida that we were originally planning to set up three. We've had it for probably a little over a month now, and just recently changed strategy to just try and wholesale it to an investor. Found an investor within a day, but we couldn't find anybody to buy it owner financed in a month. So I'm wondering if strategy was off here or how you look at, you know, which exit strategy you choose. So I'm really not sure with this big of a market, what went wrong here. The property is in great condition. I mean, recently remodeled. She just couldn't afford the payments anymore. It's not like she was in pre-foreclosure, just didn't want to continue paying it. So we were going to just sub three and try to find somebody, but it always came down to the numbers or people just thought the payment was a little bit high.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if just us pricing it wrong or our strategy was off there.
Well, I will say, like, how many deals do you guys have going right now?
Right now we have 7, I believe.
7, okay. So what I see generally whenever someone needs more help, this is what I've seen for me as a case study first, and then for a lot of other people, is that whenever you need more infrastructure in the business, one of the first ways to see it is that your owner finance deals stay on market longer. Okay. And the reason for that is it's always easier to buy than to sell. So if we're going to owner finance even a really, really good house at a good price, it's always going to take more buyers to get a sale than it is sellers to get a buy. So if we're at 10 to 15 leads per contract on the purchase side, it's often, 75 on the sale side. So getting 75 people through the house, and whenever that's the case, I just see that for many people, it's one of the first things that they stop doing is like really focusing on the owner finance deal because they're going out, they're buying equity. I don't know if that's the case here. You guys can kind of decide on that. But it's one thing that like whenever I see someone and they're like, hey, my owner finance house is sitting. I'm like, okay, cool. How many purchases do we have right now? Okay, cool. And how much time are we spending there? Especially if it's a solopreneur. If you were by yourself and you had 7 by yourself, then I would say that's almost definitely the problem. Because it's really tough to run 7 deals at one time as a solo person. So besides that, we'd have to deep dive into the process. Like, are we posting in Facebook groups daily? Are we getting to people in real time? Are the signs going out? Is the voicemail correct? We've had signs go out and there's no sign in the front yard. So people are driving around and then they don't know who to contact, stuff like that, just really wonky stuff. So it'd be tough to completely diagnose, but those would be some things I would look at.
Okay. So how do you price out your houses when you're selling them under finance compared to the ARV?
Yeah. So about a 10% bump minus 1/2 cost of repair. So if it's a 300K house with 50K in repairs, so 10% bump would bump it to 330, and then I would reduce it by 25. We're basically right back at 300.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't know if that was a problem here, but do you adjust quickly after based on the feedback that you get, or do you just let it sit there for how long until you adjust the pricing?
Yeah. So if I have feedback that is consistent, then I'll take it certainly into consideration, but I would have to have like consistent information, and if somebody says, well, it's too much, well, did you like the house? Yeah, we like the house. Got it. So roughly how much too much do you think it is? Well, I think it's 20,000 overpriced. Okay. Got it. So not saying that I would at all, but if it was $20,000 less, would you buy it? Now we're sniffing it out, and then I would do a reduction to the ridiculous. It's like, okay, so it's $20,000 too much. How long do you think you'd stay here? Like, oh, I'd be here for 10 years. Okay, well, let's just say it's 5. So we're talking about $4,000 per year. That's $300 per month. That's about $10 per day that you'd have to invest in this house to get it. And, and I used to do this when I sold real estate, because I'd be with people all day and I'd be like, you know what? You don't smoke, do you? You see, by not having that habit, you're able to save twice as much as what this home is going to be every single day. Now it's very difficult for them to not move forward. Especially, I had one time, there was a teenager whose girlfriend lived down the street. He was motivated to live there. And so he said, Dad, if you need the $10 a day, I can mow some lawns down the street. I'll give you the $10 a day. That was just kind of funny, but because if they're saying, oh, it's too high, well, did you like the house? No. Well, what was it about the house you didn't like? So that gives me the information that I need. Or if they say, well, we love the house, how much too much do you think it is? Oh, about 20 grand. So would you buy it at 20K less? Oh, no, I need like 100K off. Well, then we're not talking to somebody that's really our buyer.
Gotcha. Okay. So you kind of just try to sniff through what they're telling you. And then try to narrow it down that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that close is called reduction to the ridiculous. So, whatever the difference is in price, you basically break it down per year, per month, per day. And by the time you get to per day, it's 10 bucks. $20,000 seems like a lot of money, but $10 a day doesn't really, So if somebody really wants something, they'll be able to emotionally justify that.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Cool. Awesome, dude. Brett, how's it going?
So I'm doing my first, after I took a couple months off just because I was spreading myself too thin. And yeah. So I'm now jumping back in. But I got my first owner, sub two owner finance deal. I've done sub two, but held them as a rental or Airbnb.
Yep.
But this is my first one that I'm going to be doing. I'm glad you mentioned the things about Georgia because it's in Rossville, Georgia. So hopefully they'll come meet me to close on it. But like, how soon do you start marketing this deal? The homeowners contacted me, but then it was listed with the agent. I found out after the fact. And the agent was actually really nice to work with. And it's kind of helped pitch the whole thing of subject too. But like, how soon do you start marketing owner financing? Do you wait to close to actually do that? Or, you know, I started posting stuff on Facebook now. So
yeah. Well, dude, all right. So I love your decision making. It's like, hey, I'm going to do something if it's wrong and figure it out later. So that's perfect because that's what you have to have. So it depends, man. Like if I'm in a position where I have a good equity position and I know I want this deal, then I'm going to wait and close on it and then market it. Okay. If I'm not in a position where it makes sense for me to close it, the numbers are too tight. I'm not really sure about the value. There's more repairs than what I want. Like the deal we talked about earlier. Yeah. Okay. Then I'm going to sub three this deal instead. And I'm going to be in a position where I'm going to put my buyer in place before we close. So that way I never own the house. I'm not fronting money on the house. We don't guarantee payments on the house. I'm not wholesaling the house. We don't have to fix anything. I'm going to market it for sale with owner finance, but I'm going to tell my seller that I'm going to do this. Okay. So it's like, hey, the only way I can do this is to put my buyer in place before we close. So how that works is, and you already have the script for that. So, you know, that way you don't have the risk of market, you know, and then your seller closes with your buyer and your assigned profits. So that way you don't even have to go to closing.
Okay. Is there a way to back into that? Cause we've already set a closing date and came to terms.
So you can negotiate anything once you have a reason to. So have we gotten a home inspection on this?
Yes.
Okay. Have we done a renegotiation already?
Yes.
Okay. And did they come off of price within that?
Yes.
Okay.
And so it was originally 25K at closing with another 25K paid out in $500 a month installments. And now they've reduced it $10,000 in that price. And they're also only going to do $100 a month installments.
How bad are the repairs? Because this is sounding pretty good so far.
The repairs it wasn't anything major, but it was an extensive, it was the 72 page inspection report. So it was just like a lot of little stuff. Like they had galvanized piping and,
is it livable?
Mixed with pet. Yeah. They're living in it now.
Okay. But so for an average person, because I've seen some people live in some stuff that they should have never lived in, but for an average person, like rentable, is it in rentable condition?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then you should close on it. Like, that the condition is not bad enough. Like whenever I say, you know, the condition is really bad, so we don't want to close on it. Like that means pretty much it's not livable. So based on what you're telling me, I think you're good enough to close on this. So you're not going to have to sub three it, but you know, that should kind of give you what you need, I think.
Yeah. I just didn't know how soon you started the marketing process with, especially with it listed with an agent, that complicates things a little bit, but
it does.
Okay. I just stole their pictures and started marketing as owner finance.
Borrowed, I think, is a kinder word. Borrowed, but
she gave me permission. So
okay, cool. Well, then we didn't borrow anything. We were just giving it to them. But yeah, just wait to really push it until you close.
Okay, and you don't recommend. So I mean, I got an estimate of repairs would be like $13K to do everything on the report from contractor down there. But you would recommend not really doing anything until absolutely necessary?
No, I would never do anything.
Okay.
Yeah. 13K is like move-in ready as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. All right. I'm so used to rehabbing houses. I just always feel like I need to, but
yeah, there's more money in financing than in fixing. So just owner finance it, take the paper.
Oh, trust me, man. We just did a $200,000 renovation on a house and I'd never want to do that again.
So. Yeah. No, I get it. I get it.
Cool. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. All right. I hate to cut it short, but I am in a time crunch on this one. So Vera, if you want to email me, I'm happy to look at whatever you had. Brad at bradsmotherman.com. If you guys have any questions, feel free to email me. Appreciate you guys being with us today. We'll see you guys next time.